Your body, I'll set your knees up. Is this the first time for some people here? They've come, or people have come before?
First time.
Okay. All right.
Okay. Last week, so.
Okay, I guess I'll introduce myself. So, Omaganat, Simiranda Shah, Gananjana, Shmaria, Chakshur, and Vinitam, Yena, Tasmash. So, my name is Birkrishna Das Goswami. And I am a disciple of His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, who is the founder and acharya of the Krishna Consciousness Movement. And I've been practicing the practice of Bhakti Musical accompaniment. So I've been practicing Bhakti Yoga for over 50 years. It's a long time. And I started practicing when I was about 20. I guess that dates me. So, for those of you here for the first time, I'm going to briefly describe what Bhakti Yoga is, and then I'll tell the story of why I'm practicing Bhakti Yoga, because that's a very good way to introduce everyone to Krishna consciousness. So Bhakti Yoga, yoga means to connect. It comes from the Sanskrit word yuj, which means basically connect. So bhakti refers to devotion or love, so to connect with the source of everything, who is Krishna, and Krishna has different names in different cultures. He may be called Allah, Yehovah, Yahweh, or different names like that. Adonai, which means the one. So, to connect with him through the process of love. And the way one expresses love, just like the way one expresses love in this world, is by talking to someone, tell them how much you love them, right? Also buying things for them too. That's another subject. And it gets kind of expensive. So basically the way we connect with Krishna through love is by chanting this Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, which is a spiritual sound vibration. And because it's a spiritual sound vibration, it is non-different from the object to which it refers. Whereas material sound is different from the object to which it refers. For example, if I say water, 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 it doesn't quench my thirst. I have to actually drink the water. But the spiritual sound vibration means that if you say Krishna, Krishna is there. That's the philosophy behind what we're doing. So when we chant Krishna, or Krishna's name, or any name of God, we're not sectarian here, then it connects us with the Absolute. And by being connected with the Absolute, then one gets purified. Just like when you get in touch with fire, you become hotter. Hopefully. Or you get cremated, one or two. You just get hotter when you're in touch with fire. So when you're in touch with the supreme fire, to use a metaphor, your actual consciousness becomes more and more purified. It's like fire sometimes is used to purify things. Obviously, if you boil water, it purifies the water, it gets rid of the bacteria and the viruses and everything like that. So in the same way, by this chanting, you're in contact with the pure spiritual fire, which purifies the consciousness. And when the consciousness gets purified, you're able to see who you are. It's like when I clean my glasses, which I don't really need. I only need for reading close-up. When I clean my glasses, I can actually see all of you. If my glasses were dirty, I wouldn't be able to see all of you. And the reason my glasses are dirty is because they've been everywhere. And I haven't cleaned them today. I didn't clean them. That's just an example I'm giving. So the reason that our consciousness is dirty is that our consciousness has been everywhere. What do I mean by that? We've had many births in this world. Now, the philosophy I'm giving is coming from the Bhagavad Gita, it's not just from me. The Bhagavad Gita is quite an old book. Scholars differ as to the age of the Bhagavad Gita. But in any case, it's a very old book that details the philosophy of the Vedic literatures. So anyway, according to the Bhagavad Gita, we've had many, many births in this world, and in each and every birth, we accumulate traumatic experiences. It's like if some of you like certain things and some of you hate other things, probably because of what happened in your childhood. I often use the example that for many years I hated beets. You know what a beet is? You know, ones with red things and reddish.
Oh, yeah.
Beetroot. Well, we call them beets in America. But I hated beets. Why? Because my mother would force me to eat them when I was young. So the consciousness was affected by my experience when I was young. So a lot, I mean, that's a fact. I mean, psychologists have understood this for years. that if you go into someone's childhood, you can understand why they think and feel and do certain things nowadays. So, according to the Vedas, we've had many, many childhoods and adulthoods and old agehoods. infinite. And so we have all this accumulated trauma, or we would call impressions, on our consciousness, which not referring to this body, because this body is temporary, but referring to what the Vedas call the subtle body, or what in the West is called the astral body. And so in order to clear out those impressions on the consciousness, it's required to do spiritual activity. That's what yoga is, that's what bhakti yoga is. And then the more you do that spiritual activity, you actually can see reality. You can actually perceive. And I've been doing that for 50 years, and it gets better all the time. I've been singing the same song for... Can you imagine singing the same song for 50 years? Oh my God. You would probably have to be obsessive compulsive or a Hare Krishna devotee to be doing that. So anyway, so we've been singing the same song, and it gets better and better because it's spiritual. But if you sing the same material song over and over again, it gets pretty bad, even if it's a nice song. So that's why you have to keep changing songs on the internet all the time, so you can actually have new and newer songs. But spirituality is ever increasing. Krishna, in one of his explanations, said it's ananda buddhi vardhanam, which in Sanskrit it's always increasing, an ocean of ecstasy. Anyway, so that's what bhakti yoga is, and then eventually one realizes one's spiritual identity, and one doesn't have to undergo birth and death in this world, and returns to a transcendental spiritual realm where there are activities, just like we have activities in this world, but this world is a reflection of the spiritual realm. It's full of activities, it's full of relationships, but the activities and relationships are pure and enjoyable, and not so subject to the temporary nature of this world, miserable nature of this world, and the ignorant nature of this world. And that's Krishna consciousness in a nutshell. How about that? Pretty quick explanation. So then I think even more interesting is, why am I doing what I'm doing? After 50 years, you know, why did I start doing this?
Why'd you keep going?
Yeah, and why am I doing it now? But anyway, so I started. I was a student at a university, and the reason I was studying science, as far as that is to believe. I was an engineering student at Northwestern University near Chicago, Evanston, Chicago. And the reason I was studying science is because I wanted to understand what the purpose of life was. You know, where did we come from? You know, how is everything, or why was everything created? These are different questions. How and why are different questions. One is a teleological question, is what is an ontological question. Anyway, so I thought science could answer those questions. And so I was quite a good scientist. I was studying nuclear engineering. I was working with nuclear engineering for a while, nuclear materials for a while, and actually we learned how to make an atom bomb. But I won't tell you all how to do that.
That's
a
backyard project.
Yeah, I mean, that wasn't during World War II where I helped bomb Japan or anything like that. I was born after that time, 1949. So, but anyway, I was quite adept at science, but then I found out that science couldn't answer the questions I had because they kept changing the theories. They couldn't explain how things came about, or why things came about, or even we couldn't understand everything about the elementary particles of matter. And even today I was reading some scientific paper about how sometimes particles switch their identity, which is really interesting. I found that quite interesting. Different subatomic particles switch their identities. And it's amazing. And the more I studied science, the more I became convinced there must be a God. And actually, I was also studying, recently I've also studied microbiology. And the more I study biology and science and physics and everything like that, I see how there's an order to everything. Things couldn't have come about by chance. Because practically speaking, if you understand something called probability theory, some of you may know about what I'm talking about, it's impossible for one protein, which is composed of amino acids, to actually come, one functional protein to have come about by chance in the space of the whole time frame of the universe, or the space of the whole universe. So, you're looking at basic impossibilities. I'm not going to speak scientific notation, but you know, like 1/10 to the 1 billionth possibility, which is basically impossible. So this convinced me more and more there must be some body behind the cause and effect of this world or the design of this world. And so I started to study many different religious literatures, talk to religious people, nobody could answer the questions I had. And I started to study philosophy, different types of philosophy. I mean, of course, existentialism was one of my favorites at that point. And then ultimately, I was frustrated, very much frustrated, so I dropped out for a while. That was the hippie years, you know. Hippies? Heard of hippies? No. The 1960s. And so I dropped out, and I thought, well, about it, you know, I'm frustrated in my search for the absolute, so I did different things, like I went to an island in the Bahamas and started to meditate there. And that didn't really answer my questions that I had, especially because there were sharks all around there. And every time I wanted to go swimming, the sharks were around me. And also, every time I wanted to meditate, there were wild boars, pigs. And that was kind of frightening, too. So I did a whole bunch of things, and eventually I was chanting, not Hare Krishna, I was chanting this Om. Everyone's heard of Om, A-U-M. Om, which is actually mentioned by Krishna in the Gita. Pranavasava Vedeshu Sapake Prashamnushu. It's a sound vibration in the Vedic literature. It's a spiritual sound. And I would sit for 5 or 6 hours a day chanting this Om in a yoga, practicing yoga. And I basically had some really interesting experiences. There were like animals would surround me. It was in Florida, actually.
Oh, nice.
Florida. And it was in Miami at that time. It was in my parents' house at that time. And not big animals, not big, like the alligators you got here. The little animals. And I became very enlivened. I had already adopted a vegetarian lifestyle because that was an obvious thing. It didn't take much brains for me to figure that one out. And that's before I came in touch with Christian consciousness. Then one day, I heard Prabhupada, who is the, you see his deity over there, he was, they were playing a radio of Prabhupada's chanting on the, a song of Prabhupada chanting on the radio. And it struck me, the sound vibration really struck me as something really spiritual. And I began to chant that and follow Krishna consciousness on my own, and I obtained one of Prabhupada's books. I started to read one of Prabhupada's books. And it impressed me, but I didn't want to join any society, you know. I was definitely against institutions, because I saw that religious institutions generally destroy the spirit of the religion after some time, which is a fact. I mean, in the institutions, people have other considerations, bureaucratic considerations, they have considerations, financial considerations, power plays. I mean, every, what's that? Oh, the sun. Let the sun. Anyway, I definitely didn't want to join any institutions. So, you know, as you know, the Hare Krishna movement is called ISKCON. It's sort of like an organization. I don't know if we're such an organized organization, but we're an organization. Sometimes people say, I don't want to join an organized religion. And I say to them, that's okay, because it's God. That's organized right now. So I actually stayed away from the Hare Krishna movement for about a year or two, for a variety of reasons, you know, my bias against institutions, and also because people were a little fanatic in their presenting Krishna consciousness. Just like sometimes you run into fanatics in every religion, basically Christian religion or whatever religion, Muslim religion, fanatics. So we had our Hare Krishna fanatics, and they were telling me basically that I was going to see this person named Yamaraj, who was more or less equivalent to the prison warden of the material world, unless I joined immediately. So I stayed away. And then, as luck would have it, I had the opportunity to meet Prabhupada in 1971 in Gainesville, Florida, which is not too far from here. So I had the opportunity to meet Prabhupada. As soon as I met Prabhupada, I could see that he was a genuine spiritualist who was connected. And I recognized Prabhupada. You know, sometimes we have these recognitions called deja vu, where you recognize someone from before, you know, can't remember where you met them or, you know, what was the circumstance. So it's like past life stuff. So I recognized Prabhupada as my spiritual master, and then at that point I dedicated my life to serving Prabhupada. And as I said before, it gets better all the time. The process of Krishna consciousness, more and more realizations, the more we chant, the more happiness. Even though, of course, you get older, the body gets older, there's no guarantee you're not going to get older. But it's just, it's something that I feel, and I know, gives me a purpose in life, not only for myself, but to help others to understand their purposes. Because if we don't have a purpose in life, our life is basically like animals. You know, just eating, sleeping, reproducing, fighting with each other. Sure, there's a lot of fighting right now. If you go on the internet, you see it all over the place. But so that's it. That's it in life. Unless we have, what's your purpose in life? I mean, why? People oftentimes don't ask the why question. You know, why are you going to the university? What's your purpose in life? And of course, if I ask my mother, she would say my purpose is to please her. But that's, she did say that. When I decided to, you know, full-time engage in the spiritual activity, she said, you shouldn't do it. Your purpose is to become a doctor. I said, why? She said, to please me. And I said, no. You know, it takes a lot of guts to say that to your mother. And then my mother conveyed to me that she was dying because I was doing something that was displeasing to her. And of course, I said, we all have to die sooner or later. So, and then you reincarnate. But anyway, it sounds pretty hard-hearted. You know, young people don't have that much heart like that. So, but she's still alive today, and she... Yes, and that was like 50 years ago, so. 51, 52 years ago, so. She tells me now that I'm her favorite son, so everything works out. Everything works out all right. So that's my background, and, you know, I travel around the world. Went before COVID, pre-COVID, teaching others about Krishna consciousness, generally in Europe. I was just in Europe about a month ago, before they closed it down to Americans. And then Fiji, Australia, New Zealand, India, you name it, and giving lectures and presenting Krishna consciousness to people. And especially I like presenting Krishna consciousness to young people, or people in young bodies. Because as Prabhupada said, that's the age for education. You can't teach an old dog new tricks. That's not to say that people who are older can't take their spiritual life, but it's easier from the beginning to take up spiritual life like that. So what I want to do is allow you all to ask questions about any topic you'd like to hear about, or question anything like me to answer. Yeah.
Is So,
can you ask a question? Please introduce yourself.
I'm Bernard.
Bernard.
Nice to meet you guys. Nice to see you guys again. And I'm so glad you're here.
Thank you.
And I was wondering, I've heard of people feeling Krishna. So I was wondering if you could get into detail as to like what it means to like get a drop of Krishna, to like get a taste of Krishna.
Well, Krishna's there in his name. I think it's just a question of concentrating on Krishna's name.
Like, for example, the first time you said his name.
Oh, the first time I heard his name was actually even better. When I heard his name from Prabhupada on the radio, that it was just my whole life changed. I was listening to some radio, New Age radio station or something like that, and I just heard this chanting of Hare Krishna, and something snapped immediately in my brain, and I started to feel great ecstasy, and I recorded. Actually, I didn't have my recording. In those days, we just had these big reel-to-reel recorders. You know, no cassettes, no MP3s.
Oh, okay.
It was the old days.
I don't think my knowledge was that far back then.
Yeah, we had tape recorders. Anyone? No problem.
Oh, tape recorders, okay.
Tape recorders, two big reels like that. Anyway, whatever. You still find them in recording studios today sometimes, sometimes digital recording studios. So I just sat by the radio until they played that song again, and I recorded, and I played it over and over and over and over again, and basically it just implanted the seed of devotion in my heart. So that was it. And chanting Hare Krishna, what can I say? It's every time I chant, it's the same thing. It's a very, from lack of a better word, ecstatic, happiness, whatever positive word you want to use. All right?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
Maharaj.
Thank you, Bernard. Yeah.
Maharaj. My name is J.R.
J.R.?
Yes. How can one deepen their japa practice? What are some tools you've used maybe in the past to get more into it?
Okay, so for those of you who don't know what japa is, japa is the...
I'm pretty sure
okay. I thought I would explain because some people may not know what japa is. So japa is, see these beads here. There are 108 beads in the strand. And it's a type of personal meditation where one chants the Hare Krishna mantra, like Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare,
Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, 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 Ram Hare Hare.
And just for oneself, generally, you're not supposed to yell it out when you're chanting. And those who have taken initiation, they chant at least 16 rounds. That means one mantra for each bead, and there's 108 beads, and they'll do that 16 times every day. And it usually takes me an hour and a half, but some people it takes 2 hours, 2.5 hours, etc. like that. So the question is how to deepen that sort of meditation. What I find is that it's important to understand why you're doing what you're doing. Oftentimes in religion in general, or in life in general, one does things ritualistically or puts themselves on automatic pilot. I remember one story, there were two pilots flying a plane in America, and they had the automatic pilot on, and they started to talk to each other about so many other subject matters. I think it was sports or something. And they overshot their destination by 200 miles. And what happened is that the U.S. Air Force sent up some planes to either shoot them down or whatever because they thought they'd been hijacked. So when the pilots saw that, they understood they had not been paying attention. And then they turned back. Of course, they lost their pilot's licenses after that point. So oftentimes we do things in life on automatic pilot. Even we drive cars without being aware of what we're doing. Even they have this thing, Teslas now, that drive themselves. and then they crash.
Yeah,
they crash themselves. We don't have to crash them for them. Anyway, so it's always important, for me, it's always important to think of the why question. You know, why am I doing what am I doing when I'm doing? And that gives you some impetus. In Sanskrit, that's called a sankalpa, to have some intention. So what I do is before I chant, I think of why am I chanting? And that why question is answered differently at different times, because we are dynamic. We are dynamic than static. You know, it's not that we feel the same every day, all day long, no matter what. Certain times we may be chanting for the purpose of, let's say, helping someone. We're concerned with someone who is sick. For example, someone wrote me today that their husband has COVID and he's really, really sick. Please pray for him. So we may chant, you know, please, Hare Krishna, etc. like that. Please help this particular individual. Or we may be praying for our own individual purification. Or we may be praying for the whole world. You know, let the whole world become peaceful, Krishna conscious, or whatever, you know. So there's different reasons one may have for chanting, and those reasons should be at the forefront of one's mind when one is chanting. It's just like strategic planning for the soul. Like if you're going to start a company or something, you have to do some strategic planning. You have to have a vision statement or mission statement. So what is it? You know, what is the mission statement for your life? And, you know, what is your goal? What are your goals? What are your SMART goals? I mean, strategic planning like that. So, if you get into the why aspect, then it becomes very easy to focus. But if you're just doing it as a ritual, then you won't be focused at all. Because you have to, you know, many people do spiritual things in every religious tradition because they have to. It's just part of their ritual. And they don't examine their beliefs. Why do they believe what they believe in? Of course, that involves another branch of philosophy, which is called epistemology. You know, why do we believe what we believe in? So, and most people are like that. They just, like, believe in something. I mean, right now you see this whole thing, you know, people vaxxers or anti-vaxxers, and they just believe in something because they've been told it and they don't look into it. You know, I'm not taking a position right now. I'd probably be kicked out of here if I take a position. But anyway, you just believe in something without looking into something yourself. I mean, for example, myself, because of my scientific background, I've made my decision on vaccinations, which I'm not going to mention. Because I understand the technology, I understand the scientific base, I understand the studies that have been done, and I understand the risk assessment, you know, comparative risk assessment. So, not because someone said it on the internet, or they didn't say that on the internet, you know, just like, it's craziness. So, we should make our decisions in life, and everybody's responsible for their own decisions in every area of life. And so you have to understand what you're doing, why you're doing it, how you're doing it, what, how, when, etc. like that. Does that answer the question?
Yes, thank you.
That's what I found is being very effective in helping to concentrate on japa. Okay, yes?
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
I have some questions.
Oh, wait, your name?
My name is Nisri.
Nisri. How do you know when you're making spiritual progress? There's several different ways. The Bhagavatam describes that one becomes, gets a taste for spiritual activities. So much so that one loses an interest for things that are spiritually counterproductive. That's called detachment. True detachment is not an aversion to material things or things that are not connected to spiritual life. In the Gita, Krishna says attachment and aversion are actually the same thing. They're opposite sides of the same coin. But true detachment from this world is sort of a neutrality. You know, and at the same time, an attachment to something spiritual. I mean, for example, I'm here in Orlando. So some of the devotees who were hosting me said, would you like to go to Disney World? And I said, no. And why did I say no? Not because I have anything against Disney World. Because I've been there before. But not because I have anything against it. But because I got things that give me much more happiness. You know, having such a good time doing what I'm doing, that something that would be outside of my spiritual activities, not because I'm just a fanatic, Hare Krishna, or anything like that, it's just some, it's just like, whatever, you know. I'm not against Disney World, and I'm not for it. It's just like, whatever. That's called, it's Sanskrit, the word is nirapeksha, which means just like neutrality at that particular point. So that's one way that you know that you're making spiritual advancement, that you're actually not so interested in those things that are counterproductive to spiritual life. And then you're very interested in, then you're very interested in serving Krishna or engaging in spiritual activities. And you're attracted to chanting so much. And then another symptom is that you actually feel symptoms of ecstasy. In the Vedic literature, specifically one book that Prabhupada translated called the Natural Devotion, it describes different symptoms of ecstasy or happiness that occur when one is advancing in spiritual life. And even those symptoms can occur when something reminds one of one's spiritual identity. In Sanskrit, that's called a vibhav. So these are different symptoms. It's not that one grows a halo or something like that, or walks on water. I mean, has nothing to do with spiritual advancement. Those particular things. The second one is super consciousness.
Super conscious chanting.
Super conscious chanting. I have to think about that. That's not a question I've heard before, nor have I heard that word super conscious chanting. Well, super conscious means being extremely conscious while you're chanting, or your chanting is on a higher spiritual platform. Yeah.
Then it just becomes automatic on
right.
The level. Anyway.
Yeah, super con. Well, then chanting becomes part of one's heart.
Yeah.
And then one is always associating with Krishna. So that we could term as super conscious chanting or super consciousness chanting. The higher level of chanting, when one actually perceives the presence of the spiritual realm in the Mahamantra, yes. That was a good question. Anybody else have any questions? Yes.
Hello, my name is Stephen.
Stephen.
I would just like you to restate what you were saying before about detachment being two sides of the same coin. You said something along the lines of something about neutralizing.
Okay, let me explain that.
Okay.
Yeah, it's a good question. Let's say. Okay, let's say someone is very attached to pizza, for example. Okay, everyone likes pizza. And somehow or other, you're supposed to give it up because it's bad for your health. It's just theoretical. I'm not saying it's bad for your health. Don't quote me on that, please. But let's say it's bad for your health. You're supposed to give it up. Or let's say you have some allergies. So it's really bad for you. You have an allergy to cheese. So then you will start to think of pizza in a negative way. And the more you start to think of something in a negative way, the more you start to think of it. Oftentimes I give the example that if I were to tell all of you not to think of a pink elephant, you just really say, don't think of a pink elephant, don't think of a pink, do not think of a pink elephant. You probably won't be able to get a pink elephant out of your mind. So, because you can't do a don't. Does that make sense? You can't do a don't. So when you're averse to something, you're thinking of that thing probably even more than when you were attracted to it. Right? I mean, if you think about, like, hate, for example, it's sometimes stronger than love. I mean, really, like, hate. And sometimes you see these political rallies that are like that. They're stronger than love. So aversion and attachment are basically both types of attachment. They're both opposite sides of the same coin for that reason. And neutrality would be something, you know, I don't hate the thing, and I'm not attracted to it either. It's just like, you know, whatever. It's whatever. Let me give you an example. It's like when you've eaten a good meal and you're full. You don't want to eat anymore. And something like that. When you're full of spiritual happiness, or bliss, whatever, satisfaction, then you're not hungry anymore. You're satisfied. So that's a sort of, that's what I mean by neutrality. Not that you're callous or without consciousness, but you're neutral to things that are counterproductive to Christian consciousness. You're not against them. I mean, for example, some of the things that actually are counterproductive to Christian consciousness, one of the things is intoxication, right? So, all right, intoxication. So I'm not thinking negatively about intoxication. I'm just saying it's not productive to Christian consciousness. So I'm not attracted to it, nor am I repulsed by it. You know, if I see someone smoking some ganja, anyway, you don't have to know what I'm talking about. So if I see someone smoking some ganja, I'm like, ew! I just say, you know, it's not going to help the spiritual life because I'm not attached to it, attracted to it, and I'm not repulsed by it. So that's the spiritual consciousness of neutrality. It's like, whatever. You know, chill out, whatever. All right.
Thank you.
Yes, yes, sir.
My name is Anil. I have a question.
Okay.
About this japa. You know, I've heard that minimum we have to do 16 malas.
Yes.
In a day. That's to continue.
Yes.
Now, let's say in case if we don't reach to that level of 16 and we are doing, let's say, 2 or 5 or whatever the number,
yeah,
we stick to that and continue engaging ourselves in different activities related to bhakti.
Yes.
So will it make any difference?
Yeah, that's fine. The only, when we're talking about 16 times around a day or 16 rounds a day, that's for those who have taken a promise or made a promise or taken a vow to do that, people who are initiated. But it's not required. What I recommend is that people start with whatever they can do, you know, 1 round a day, 5 minutes, 10 minutes. And if they want to increase, they increase. And if the level of commitment comes to the point where they actually want to take initiation. Initiation means making a promise that they'll do it. That's fine. And if it doesn't, that's fine also. They can still go on serving Krishna. Krishna's happy to accept their service. And whatever, you know. So there's no force. It has to come by someone desiring to increase the number of rounds, and it's usually gradual.
Let's say increase the number, let's say from 2 we reach to 5 or 10.
Yeah.
Then is it must? We should stick to that level instead of increasing?
Not necessarily. It depends on one's level of commitment. That's up to the individual. And usually if you want to commit to something, it's good to stick to one's commitment or promises. But there's no need. There's no need, you know, to actually chant a certain number of rounds unless one takes initiation or like that. And it doesn't take that long, but it takes time for people to build up to that number of rounds. But even if one chants Hare Krishna once, that's wonderful. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that if one chants Hare Krishna even once, then we offer respects in our minds to such an individual. I think that's simply wonderful. So we're not, you know, we're not prejudiced against people who don't chant 16 rounds a day. But this is, you know, this is for full-time initiated devotees. And by full-time, I don't mean that someone just sits in the temple all day long, just does whatever he's going to do. That means people who are committed to the mission of helping others. And that's another reason that I decided to do what I'm doing, is because I wanted to commit myself to do something that would help others, help the world. Because that was one of the messages of my generation, that we should actually try to help others and be dedicated to helping others. All right. Any other questions from anyone? There's some good questions here. Questions? Yes. Yes, I think anything can get you to concentrate. Well, I can't say anything. Because then you can say, well, smoking helps me concentrate. I gotta be careful with that statement. But I would say, you know, any spiritual thought, activity that will help you concentrate, or, as I mentioned before, having a reason for chanting is really important. You know, what... Ask yourself, you know, why am I chanting? Am I chanting just because I have to? Doing things because you have to do them is not good. I mean, that's really a bad motivation. And I think not only with chanting, but also in one's regular activities in life, if you're, let's say, working a job because you have to work a job, your life is going to be miserable. If you approach life like that, I have to go to school. I have one friend who went to medical school because he had to. His parents were forcing him. And after he graduated, he said, I did this for you, but I'm not going to be a doctor. Now I'm going to do what I actually want to do. So he spent so many years, you know, 6 years or whatever it was, becoming a doctor. So whatever we do in life, we should do with the energy of, I choose to do this because, dun, 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 dun. You know, you have to give yourself the reason for choosing to do something. And otherwise life is miserable in any way, materially or spiritually. You know, working a job because I had to come here to Orlando because Dwight Piana forced me to come. No, I chose to come. He asked me to come, and I chose to come because we all have a need. I mean, getting into psychology again, We all have a need for autonomy in our own decisions in life. We all have these basic human needs. There's one famous psychologist named Maslow who talked about this, how we all have basic human needs and spiritual needs and emotional needs and social needs. And those needs we should work on. And we should be motivated by those needs. So one of the needs is that we have need to make our own choices in life. And if you're forced to do something, then you're really going to want to do the opposite after some time. You're going to rebel. It's like a child. If you tell a little child you have to do something, then it actually becomes pleasant not to do it. I remember when I was a child, my mother used to tell me, you have to take your dirty clothes and put them into the hamper. You know, the dirty clothes there. And because she told me to do that, I never did it. I would always throw them on the floor, and I felt great happiness in doing that. I'm sure we've all had experiences like that, you know, some rebellion type of thing. And to this day, I throw my clothes on the floor after, you know. Because fortunately, as a guru, I have disciples to pick up the clothes, right? It's better than having a mother. So, so it works out, it works the same if we are thinking ourselves, even if it's not an external person, if we're thinking in our own mind that we have to do something, after a while it will be very pleasant not to do it or to do the opposite. So that's really important with chanting. Don't think I have to chant. I'm choosing to chant because I have this reason. And if it helps, you know, think of the deities, think of some of the devotees, think of the prasadam that you're going to eat when you're finished. I remember one thing is, when I first took up Krishna consciousness in the temple, I rewarded myself with eating a sweet ball, I don't know if you know what a sweet ball is, after each round. So I chant around and just like after that I pop a sweet ball in my mouth. And so it was a good impetus. Wasn't so good for my health, but it was actually good. It really kept me going. So if you have to do that, do that. You know, whatever you have to do to motivate yourself, but it has to be joyfully done, something positive. And punishment doesn't work either, you know. You punish yourself, you feel guilty. Like many religions, they talk about, you know, there's a lot of guilt and punishment and self-flagellation, you know, just too much. Religions are too much. All right, who else has a question? Yeah, another question.
What
did you do after medical school? I think he be, I'm trying to remember, what did he do? He didn't become a doctor, that's for sure. I think he became a businessman.
That's different.
Because everybody has a different nature. I mean, this also was taught in the Bhagavad Gita, that people have different natures. Some people are like brahminical, which means they're intellectuals. Some people like to make money or like to be in charge of a government, you know, politicians or something like that. Some people like to work with their hands, doing musical things, or artisanry. Everybody is different, and we have to respect that difference, and Krishna respects that difference. He doesn't expect everyone to be like me. So there's variety. There's variety. So I don't remember specifically what he decided to do, but I remember that he told me about that. And wow. Imagine going to medical school just to please your parents. And then, I mean, sometimes, because you're from the Indian culture, will understand what I'm talking about. There's a lot of stress on this hierarchy. In America, we don't have so much stress on hierarchy. You understand what I mean?
Yeah.
You know, in Indian culture, sometimes if someone is your older brother, you got to listen to him. And that's there's a story in the, it's called the Ramayana, how there was this Krishna feared his lord Brahman. He had a younger brother, Lakshman, and he basically bossed Lakshman around. And Lakshman had to do a lot of things he didn't want to, which were good ultimately, but. And then on the other hand, when Krishna appeared over 5,000 years ago, Krishna had an elder brother, but he never listened to him. So Krishna was more American than Indian. Krishna didn't listen to his parents either. So anyway, different cultural differences, which are quite funny. So that's, yes?
Is it true that at a young age, a Christian did try to get, somebody tried to kill Krishna at a young age?
Oh, yeah.
One of his brothers and he made it out.
Yeah, well, they had a lot of people try to kill him when he was young. I mean, there was a nurse who tried to poison him. Her name was Putana, and he took care of her. But he arranged that she reincarnated in a better way. She went to the spiritual world. So when Krishna takes care of you like that, and then there's all sorts of attempts on Krishna's life that occurred in his early days. Good question.
Somebody told a conqueror, maybe not a conqueror, like somebody that owned land.
Yeah.
Who owned a certain land that one of the sons of Krishna's mom was going to try and kill him. So that's the reason that he started killing.
Oh, yeah, his name was Kamsa.
Yes, Kamsa.
Kamsa, yeah, he was Krishna's uncle.
Krishna did kill him when he became older, correct? I'm pretty sure that happened.
Yeah, yeah, because he was killing Krishna's brothers.
Yeah.
Oh.
You know, he was a murderer, and Krishna wanted to stop him. He was murdering so many people. He put Krishna's mother and father in jail.
Yes.
And then Krishna just... And then he tried to kill Krishna by employing some wrestlers. He had some big wrestlers try to kill Krishna, and also a big elephant he tried to kill Krishna with. And then Krishna said, "That ain't gonna work." And Krishna took care of him. So yes, good story. Don't mess with Krishna. Yeah. Okay. Check out my seminar on empathy on my YouTube channel. Secondly, just to summarize it, to realize that everybody at all times is acting to meet or fulfill certain needs. And their strategies may be bad, but their motivations are to fulfill needs. And that, I mean, it's hard to unpack that in just a short amount of time right now, but if you're all interested in that subject matter, on my YouTube channel I have several different training sessions and seminars that are there. YouTube channel, I can give you a name on YouTube channel later on, because I teach empathy seminars, and I have some books. I don't have a book with me right now. I have a book I published on empathy and Krishna consciousness. And I brought one copy with me. It's where I'm staying, but it's not with me right now. So I could give you that copy if you want, if you're here the next day or two when I come. So I'll bring the copy with me. But it gives some hint how to be empathic with people, even though people do things that stimulate certain emotions that you're not too happy with. So, good question. Yes?
Hare Krishna Prabhu, first of all, thanks for the wonderful guitar kirtan. I don't think I've been to guitar kirtan till now. I'm Brahmaji, by the way.
Brahmaji?
Yes.
I'm Vishnu, I'm Shiva. That's a joke. That's an initiated name, or?
No, that's my boss's name.
Oh, that's a nice name.
Yeah, I like it too. Maharaj, I forgot.
Brahma means the greatest.
Is it?
Yeah, in Sanskrit. Brahmana, Brahma means the greatest or the topmost.
Ah, he is.
He is.
I have small questions and then maybe some, maybe a little bit deeper. Your mom was very proud of you, you said. Have you converted her to Krishna devotee? I'm curious.
It's interesting you ask that question. Right now, she's in New York and she's under full-time care. She lives by herself in her own apartment, but she has a full-time caregiver with her. And the other day I had a conversation with her, and she said to me, you know something? She said, I want to admit to you, she was saying this, I'm a Hare Krishna devotee. because she's a little senile right now. And I said to her, you know, I am too. I said, really? That's wonderful. So what happens is that I had her full-time nurse having her watch my videos when I'm on the internet. So her nurse, you know, they have it on big screen TV. Her nurse tunes in on them whenever I go online. And so my mother is watching. And she's just confined basically to her chair right now. She's about 93 years old.
93.
That's a long time. Long time. And I keep in touch with her and visit her. You know, in spite of COVID, I've visited her sometimes. And in New York, Manhattan. A nice lady. Very educated lady. She was a remedial reading consultant with several degrees. So, and my father passed away. There's the question about my father. He passed away many years ago before that. I mean, maybe like 30 years ago. But he always said that he attributed his success in business to my being a Hare Krishna devotee. So he was very, very favorably disposed. Both in the favor of the disposal, although he did become a vegetarian, and he never took off Krishna consciousness, but he helped our movement in many ways, financially and other ways. So,
have a few more. Can you spark or plant seed in a 10-year-old? You said it's hard to teach an old dog new tricks, but I have a copy at home. I'd be very grateful if you can plant seed. My daughter's heart.
Plant seeds in your daughter's heart.
For Krishna.
For Krishna. Yeah, would you bring her?
Yes, I will. I'll bring her in next 2 days.
Yeah, I'll be coming when it's Saturday.
Sunday.
Saturday the program is at your house or what?
Oh, someone else.
Yeah. Someone else.
I'll bring her.
Okay.
And then I'm an old dog. I need to learn new things as well.
You're not that old.
Older. I'm an older dog. And what can I do to feel, you said, it gets better. After 50 years, you said, it's getting better.
Do you have 50 more years?
I don't know how many years I have, but I'm saying, what can I do to have the same feeling of, oh, it's getting better. What do I need to do?
You chanting?
Yeah.
Chanting, offering your food to Krishna, serving the Vaishnavas, like that.
Mm-hmm.
And chant with more attention.
Yeah.
And every day will be better. Yes?
When people get a Sanskrit name,
good question. When people get initiated, two questions there, and they get a Sanskrit name, the guru gives the Sanskrit name. And from my perspective, what I do is I think of the person, and I pray to Krishna for giving the right name. I pray to Krishna that I'll give the right name. And then I also make sure I don't duplicate names, which is handy. Because you don't want everybody walking around in the temple with the name Govinda. Govinda the first, Govinda the second, Govinda the third. So, it's also helpful. So, sometimes, you know, if people really would like to have a Sanskrit name, then the local temple president, the guru, won't do that. But devotees can give them a nickname, sure. We do that. I do that, but some of the devotees do that sometimes, and that really helps people feel connected if they have a Sanskrit name. I remember when I first took up Krishna consciousness, I really wanted a Sanskrit name, like anything. And of course, Prabhupada, it was about after 6 months. Actually, I asked Prabhupada for initiation after about 1 week in the Hare Krishna movement. And then the temple person who was in charge, it wasn't Dwight Payana, because he wasn't even alive at that time. But he became very angry that I was jumping the gun. So I waited about 6 months, and then Prabhupada gave me the name I got. And my name may appear a little unusual for all of you. My name is Veer, V-I-R, not V-E-E-R. Krishna Goswami. So the Veer, V-I-R, is a Bengalicized pronunciation of Sanskrit V-I-R-A, which is like heroic or strong. So, but Prabhupada spoke and wrote in Bengali, not only in Sanskrit, but at least when he wrote my name, he wrote it in Bengali, so I keep it like that. But it's good, it identifies, having a Sanskrit name, identifies one as a servant of Krishna. So it helps with one's self, sense of self-identification. So, yeah, I would say if someone wants to have a nickname, I'm a present or something like that. There's no problem with that. It's helpful. It's helpful sometimes. But the guru only gives the name at the time of initiation. Good question. Yes? Yes,
Hare Krishna. My name is Joshua.
Joshua.
Yes.
That's a biblical name.
Yes.
That's a nice name.
You spoke earlier about the counterproductivity of doing things because you have to, or doing so ritualistically.
Yeah.
Or, you know, going through emotions, taking actions, not picking up the why. And so in light of the time where today we're seeing a lot of that, whereas because we're all under a situation which we all relate to, that we're all being made to understand the situation and take action in the same way without much time for discussion or proper understanding. So that being the case, is that productive, or is that strategy going to lead us to success in what we're trying to accomplish?
Personally, I don't think it leads to success in what we're trying to accomplish materially or spiritually. We need to take the time, except an emergency situation, you know, like if the building's on fire and someone says, bring some water. You don't want to take the time to say, you know, why, you know, what type of water you want. And, you know, emergency situations are one thing. But under normal circumstances, it should behoove us to find out why we're going to do something. And those who are in a position of leadership should take the time to explain. Now let's take the example of parents who want their children to go to school, and children may not want to go to school. So instead of telling the children, you've got to go to school, then taking the time to explain the natural repercussions of not going to school, the natural advantages of going to school, then the parents will be much more successful in getting the children to go to school. But it takes more time. And oftentimes, like you were saying, in the modern world, we don't have the time or don't take the time. We want to do everything quickly and just order people around, which is really, we do things without thinking. And I would say that modern society, especially nowadays that things are going so quickly because of the internet, that people just, they don't take the time to ask the why question. And then life is very dry if we're just doing things because we have to do them. Or we're doing things because we're afraid of punishment. That's another bad thing. We should do things because of what I would call intrinsic rewards. That means the thing itself has to be the reward for what we're doing, not extrinsic. Well, let me give you a practical example of the difference between extrinsic and intrinsic rewards. When I was young, I always used my own childhood for things like this, that my mother would give me money for doing well in school. So she would give me, forget how much money, maybe $5 for an A, $2 for a B, nothing for a C, and a D you get a negative. So it helped me learn accounting. Anyway, mathematics. Okay? So, but that sort of motivation, that's called extrinsic, something outside of the activity itself, would not help me, let's say, develop a taste or a desire to study. It would simply help someone develop a desire for money, right? So when you use rewards like that, then the person is simply dealing with the reward, or punishment, it works the same way, rather than developing a taste or a desire to do a particular activity. So, yes, our activities should be motivated by a positive need that we have, a positive choice. And whether we're guiding others or just guiding ourselves, we should be aware of that. Yeah.
Is there a great way you recommend to inspire others to be more aware of what they might just let go in the back of their mind?
Yeah, what I usually do is just ask people why. It's a really good way. If someone says, you know, I'm going to do this, I said, why? And then they say, give me one answer. And the answer is not the right answer. I go, why? And I keep drilling down on why, until you get to the actual motivation. Yeah. But that's it.
How do we balance the need to ask why with the risk of, I'm very conditioned that I might end up with the wrong, reasons, not articulate it well enough and end up choosing to walk away from what I'm doing right now, which is, Krishna consciousness. It's a risk, right? I'm very conditioned, and I'm not educated.
Yeah.
That's why we come to the spiritual master. So the need for why, how do we balance that risk with you?
Well, it's not that we just do it once. We should actually think very deeply about these things over a period of time. It's not that, I'll just sit down with you and say, why? You're like, oh, I should leave my wife. No, it's not like that. It's just really, really, it's a process. It's a process, and then one should be responsible in all their activities. But have a reason for being responsible. Why should you be responsible? And in the Bhagavad Gita, we find that Krishna is answering that question to Arjuna, the why question. Why should he fight? He's really giving him all these reasons. And then at the end of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, now that you've heard this, you choose. He didn't say, you got to do it. He didn't Krishna did not employ any guilt trips on Arjuna. He didn't say, you know, I'm your friend. If you don't do what I say, it's going to cause me great pain. How can you do this to me after all this time I spent with you? That's called a guilt trip. Mm-hmm. Some of you may be familiar with that guilt trip. That type of guilt trip. No, Krishna just said, all right, you've heard. Now you choose. And Arjuna chose to serve Krishna. So it's a free will. Okay, you have more questions. Good.
So the soul is purified through bhakti, through devotional service to Krishna.
Yeah.
So how can one enjoy that devotional service to Krishna? Like, maybe for you, like, when did you start enjoying serving Krishna? Did you just enjoy immediately when you started serving Krishna?
Yes.
Okay. Because I also know, you know, some people don't really enjoy serving in general.
Because they're not choosing to serve, they feel they have to.
Okay.
That's really the key right there.
So if they do it by choice, they'll ultimately enjoy it.
Yeah, they'll enjoy it if they have a reason for doing it. And the reason has to come from them. Krishna gives various reasons in the Gita, and I'm sure there are more reasons than the ones that Krishna gave. But Krishna says some people come to because they're looking for wealth, some people come because they're in distress, some people come because they're looking for knowledge, some people come because they're inquisitive. So you have to have a motivation for doing that.
Yes.
And you'll find that many people, this is also a challenge for people who are born into a particular religion, like Krishna consciousness, because they're feeling, I was born into this religion, so I have to do this, this is my religion, but it's now that they haven't chosen. Where generally you'll find more enthusiasm in people who have chosen to do something.
Outsiders coming in.
Outsiders coming in, yeah. That's a natural phenomenon, whether we're talking about Krishna consciousness or Christianity or, you know what, anything. Would you chosen to do?
Are you still being purified in doing it not for the right reason, like not by choice?
Yeah, yes, it's called the jata sukriti, is the technical word. There's still some purification, but one has to really give one's heart to really experience the full result.
Okay.
And it requires some facilitation, personal facilitation, or the facilitation of others, to come to the point of understanding, you know, connecting in that particular way.
Okay. So it's like if you do it for the right intention, it's like using Windex instead of just wiping with a dirty rag.
Yeah. That's a good example. Use Windex. Biodegradable Windex. Yes.
Hello, my name is Sabrina.
Sabrina.
Bernard.
Yes.
Can I share what I experienced and answer Bernard's question? So,
okay.
Bernard, just from my experience with Bhagavan Krishna from within, is that understanding that he is the cause of all causes. So he works through each and every one of us here. Every word, every action, every thought, it is through his energy. So how do you enjoy Krishna? It is by seeing that everything you do is for him. So for me, whether I'm doing the dishes, cooking, laundry, picking up his kids from school, he's always resonating in the back of my mind, how the mantra goes on. However, I see that everything is done through his grace. The water is flowing, the energy from my body, everything is just one unified force, and it is him. That is how I am able to experience the Bhagavan Krishna in every moment that I am aware. And the mind does get sidetracked, but you're able to bring it back once you think of him, meaning you see him in everything that you do, in every moment, in every moment. Go ahead.
I want to build off that because I think we actually read it the other day. You and me, Jim, I don't know if you remember.
Okay.
But the five ways you can see Krishna. As a friend, as a conjugal lover, as some other things. I don't remember. But I'm thinking so.
As a servant. Because we're all servants of each other. We all serve.
Right. We're all servants. But it's like you can be serving your child, your friend, your lover, and a neutral, like
yes,
serving this water bottle. So I can say
that's a
but
very
yeah,
high platform.
So I'm thinking, so I should have a clear picture of how I'm serving Krishna. How do I see Krishna? And if I can figure out how I see Krishna, if I see him as a friend or as a lover or as a child or as a parent, then I should be able to really feel the service and enjoy the service better.
Yeah, the essence of all those relationships is service.
Mm-hmm.
So if one actually thinks in love of giving someone pleasure, that's service.
Mm-hmm.
And that one great Acharya, Rupa Goswami, describes that as being active, doing it voluntarily, and doing it with the spirit, three things, you know, the spirit of trying to please the person. Those three different prerequisites.
So could I ask you guys, like, what's your relationship? Like, how do you, I don't know who wants to start first, but how do you see Krishna, you know? Like, is he your friend, is he your lover? Just, how are you
saying? My master. I see him as my master.
Yeah, that's good.
That's
good. And that's the common denominator for all relationships.
Okay.
That whether one is, I mean, if you're talking about something very elevated topics, like someone who sees Krishna in conjugal ras or a parental relationship or a friendship relationship, common denominator is Krishna's the master, we're trying to give him pleasure. Hrishikena Hrishikesha Sevanam Bhakti Uchite is the Sanskrit for that. So that's how everyone can see Krishna. And then when you try to give Krishna pleasure, because Krishna's in your heart, you'll experience the greatest pleasure yourself.
Okay.
If it's things that are done out of love, not out of force, not out of ritual, not out of fear, but out of love.
Yeah.
All right?
Thanks, Leah.
That's good. Thank you, Sabri. Good answer. Any other questions? Yes.
So if I'm asked to do a particular service for Krishna, and if I'm going to go and sing for Krishna, or cook for Krishna, so
yeah,
right? And I don't like to do that activity. I like to do another thing. I'm after singing, say, yeah, I have to cook, but not sing. So can I complain to Krishna? Krishna, I
want to do this. You can complain, yeah. it depends. Let's say you want to sing for Krishna, and you, the whoever is your boss, whatever, wants you to cook for Krishna. Then there's other things too, because you also have a need for cooperation and loving relationships and everything. So you've got to balance your needs. But ultimately, if you don't come to the point of thinking that you're choosing to do what you're doing, you're going to not be doing it with a proper attitude. If you're thinking, I'm going to the kitchen to cook, but I hate this, and I'm going to do it because he'll get angry if I don't, then that's not really devotional service. But if one thinks, I'd rather sing, but I'm choosing to go in the kitchen because cooperation and a loving relationship is important to me. So it really depends on how you phrase it in your mind. You know, there's how you phrase it. If you're phrasing it as forced, I have to, it doesn't work long term. I mean, just like today, I was speaking to one girl in Germany, and she was explaining how she continually forced to do things she doesn't want to do, and she feels completely overwhelmed with everything that people are asking her to do, and this is in a temple environment. And I told her, just say no, and explain. Not say no, and you don't say no, you rascal. You say, no, this is what I want to do. An emergency situation, I'm willing to help out, of course, but if every day is an emergency, that's a little bit too much, you know. Because her whole life is just being stressed out completely. So one has to sometimes say no. And hear the reasons for it. You know, serving Krishna is a voluntary activity. It's not a forceful activity. It's not a forceful activity. Like if Prabhupada were to tell me to do something, oh, I hate to take this circumstance, that I didn't want to do externally, I would rephrase it in my mind saying that my love for Prabhupada is so important that I am choosing to do this out of love for Prabhupada. But that may be a very high standard that many people cannot emulate or imitate. But basically we do, if we don't rephrase this, then we will be unhappy doing it. We won't be able to do it continually, long term. Anything you're forced to do, you can't do long term. You won't be able to do long term. Yes, what do you mean?
I've had to do this a lot. What I found is that your attraction or repulsion to things is what creates the conflicts within you. So you just look at the situation, take out your likes and your dislikes, look at it for what it is. What is needed? I need to do that with you. The minute you get, oh, I like this, but I'm, that's creating resistance. If you accept the situation for what it is, then you're able to do what is needed instead of what you want to do versus what you don't want to do. What is actually needed here? And that sort of alleviates all the conflicts or the battle between is this right, is this, you know, agree with it, you take that out. And that's where you have, you're able to remain neutral in the situation. And that's with anyone or anything, even if with someone speaking on a level of ignorance and you're there and you're hearing them, you're knowing that they're not able to do differently because they don't have that. So what you have to do is accept what is, because fighting with it is not going to solve anything, and just simply do what's needed. You just need to hear them, or do you need to, you know, walk away from the situation? You do what is simply needed. That has helped me in many situations.
Okay, so yes, other questions? Any other questions? Okay, is everybody a chance to chop it together?
Yeah, we all get it.
Good.
Yeah.
Oh, these are just like wrist beads.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Oh, so you just chant one?
27 beads in here.
Oh.
I think something from you, devotees here. Many of them have finger beads at home, but for the purposes of, you know, this one.
That's easier to chant 16 rounds.
Yeah, four of them take one round. For the purpose of our program,
it's
good.
Just
to get
it
placed.
Yeah. It's good. It's very
good.
The long one takes long.
A cheat sheet.
What's that?
Like a cheat sheet.
Yeah, cheat sheet.
And since you are here, we are so
grateful
that Maharaj is here.
Let's all
give Maharaj a round of applause.
Yeah,
Maharaj is also an initiator. He's going to teach us all
Okay, so I don't have small beads.
No, again, we can give you one.
Well, that's all right. Whenever it's
yours, yeah.
Just my beads, and whenever everyone else finishes, they finish.
Yeah.
Just raise your hand when you finish.
Right, we always like tell how Chen wants to make beads.
Oh, we describe how to chant.
Yeah,
okay.
You can do this.
You start with the first bead after the head bead. This is a head bead right here. And then you hold the beads between your fingers, but don't touch the beads with this finger here. This finger is considered like an ego finger. Ego means like, well, it's like a false ego finger. Because when you, in India, the tradition is if you point your finger at someone, it's actually an offense. Like that. So when you actually want to point someone out, even with the deities, you point like that, rather than like that. So it's considered, it's like a mudra. It's a fancy word in India, like mudra. Different mudras or different hand symbols, they can indicate different things. So we don't touch the beads with this finger, and we hold the beads, generally I hold the beads between these fingers right here. I guess that's what everybody else does. And then we chant one Hare Krishna mantra, and then we move to the next bead, and then the next bead until we finish going all the way around. So should we start? And everybody knows the Hare Krishna Maha mantra?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that makes it easy. I should watch it too. Maybe I don't know it. All right. So, do you do Jai Shri Krishna?
Yes, sir.
Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Vedagata Shri Vasari Gaurava Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare 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 Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare. Hare Rama. Very nice. Okay.
I have a little request.
What's that?
Can you just do like three or four rounds at your at whatever speed you use to get an hour and a half, or is that the speed you should go at?
I don't go at that speed.
Okay.
Wait, that speed, that's like 5 hours of job.
Okay, so can you just show your speed just real quick?
Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Okay.
Okay, thank you.
That's the same speed Prabhupada chanted at. You listen to Prabhupada chanting. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Same exact speed. Prabhupada chanted like 45-minute rounds.
Whoa.
But take some time. you know, in the beginning, was Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna, Krishna. Then you have 24 hours. Okay, so. I think I'll go back now.
Okay.
It looks late for me right now. And then what happens tomorrow? Nothing.
I'll let you know. Yeah.
Okay, you'll let me know. Okay, so thank you all. And if anyone has any other questions, Dwaipana knows how to get in touch with me. And I've known Dwaipana for many years. From Fiji.
Yes.
He and his wife for many years. So, okay, let me just pack up. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.